No unity, no power.
White power for white people. Black power for black people. 1967. The Black Panther Party. The movement.
Freedom.
Let's talk about freedom. Freedom, freedom.
We will not bow down to racism. We will not bow down to injustice. We will not bow down to exploitation. I'm gonna
come and take a walk with me. Supposed to walk with me. People with all that I can see.
Check this. Watch
it. Turn us loose, set us free from all the chains that bind me. Let us run in our own direction. Let us go, set us free from all this propaganda and lies.
Let your people try to teach us. I know why we'd like to bring us down.
Because we have all the dues on you. You try to tell us that our lives don't mean a thing. But we know so much better, so we're gonna take up the freedom.
Yeah.
Welcome to Every Artist Podcast. I am your host, Mae Santiago, and my co-host, Lisa G. Today, we are joined by an amazing woman, film producer Angela White. The beautiful Angela White is joining us today. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Hey, Mason. Hey, how are you guys doing today? Thank you for having me.
Pretty good.
Great. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's just an honor to have you here with us today. If you could, please just give us a little background of who Angela White is.
Yeah, Angela White is a native of New Jersey who lives in Los Angeles, California. I've been in the entertainment business now for almost 30 years, and I started doing event production in New York years ago, then became a promoter, talent manager, entertainment lawyer, then moved to L.A. and became a film producer, and now I'm also a business coach slash strategist, author, and motivational speaker. So I've done over 35 films or TV shows and worked with hundreds of students teaching them the business of entertainment. That's a little quick snapshot.
Wow. It's very impressive. And so is your educational background as well. That's amazing to see that you went to Rutgers and Delaware University. And then you also went to, you have a law degree as well.
Yeah.
That's it's amazing. That's true queen stuff right there.
Yeah,
definitely. So how was it working, coming up when you first got into the entertainment business, working with, comedians like JB Smooth when you first getting started, how was that process of getting into the business?
Good. You know, before that, I was working with a lot of musicians, and then I started interning with Def Jam, and they put me with Def Comedy Jam, and I was blessed to meet a lot of urban comedians at the time. And when I started becoming a talent manager in 1996, that was a great way for me to break into TV and film and come to L.A. So I managed, in particular, J.B. Smooth for 12 years. So it was a great lesson, journey, preparing me for the L.A. hustle and grind.
Wow, that's amazing. and then you come into your own as a film producer, and then making history at that with the movie Question of Faith. Could you give us a little background on that whole concept of how that movie came about? And
yeah, absolutely. So we shot the movie in 2000. And the way it came about, I was at the American Black Film Festival, and Bishop T.D. Jakes had a private session where he talked to about 30 African-American filmmakers at the time, and I was one of them. And he talked about how we were making movies for everybody but Christians. You know, we all have done thrillers, romantic comedies. At that point, I did almost like 12 romantic comedies and thrillers in 3 years for BET. And so he was like, why aren't you guys not focusing on the underserved? We have a huge African-American Christian population. So I talked to an investor at the time who became the executive producer. Would he be interested in financing a faith-based film? He said yes. Then we went on the journey to find one. It took us a little while to find the right one. And then when we found it, we shot it in Atlanta, Georgia in 2016. It came out in theaters a year later. And then we've been on Netflix. We just premiered on Lifetime for Easter of 2020. It's available everywhere. It's in 50 countries. So that's been a great journey. I didn't know I was the first African-American female to put a faith-based film in theaters on a national scale. So that was shocking, surprising. And it was also made me feel really proud because I want to continue breaking barriers and doors for the next generation to come behind us. That's the most important thing. So just keep breaking the doors.
Wow. That's definitely when I was reading your bio and I found out that you were the first African American woman to put a film, you know, a faith based film into national theaters. I felt like wow, that's a big deal. That's now happening, but it's amazing that you're the first to actually do it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's shocking that I was the first in 2017, my publicity team told me, because it's shocking and it's sad at the same time. You just have to keep breaking barriers. You know, when people think that there's equality as they're protesting in the streets today, there's still not equality in the entertainment business. And so there's a lot of areas in this world that need to be fixed.
So are you planning to continue releasing movies with the faith-based theme, or, you know, are you, you know, gearing up to go into different areas, like different types of movies, like action, comedies, or more biopics or anything like that, or just trying to across the board?
Yeah, so my company, Silverline Entertainment, we do everything. So we don't just do faith-based. I've only done two in my career. And I've just finished doing three TV shows, and neither one of them were faith-based. And so now we do it all. We don't put ourselves in a box. We don't let other people put us in a box. That was one faith-based. I did a faith-based for BET called Who Can I Run To in 2013. We plan to do another faith-based that's on our slate, but we also plan to do thrillers, horrors, comedies, dramas, you know, a little bit of everything. We want to be a production company that's available and accessible to everybody's needs and everybody's genre. So yeah, we're excited about the future and excited about some other projects that just already came out too. And my project that I'm talking about the most is very timely for now. It's called Hands Up. We shot that in Atlanta in November. We're getting ready to start marketing that hard, and it deals with what's happening in the country right this second, and that's the injustices against Black men. So we just did that piece. That's a political piece. That was my first time doing a political movie, and we happened to shoot it in 2019, and who would have thought it's ready to come 2020. So no, we do it all, Mason. There's no box for us, and we just want to tell truthful stories that are compelling to people and that impact people, and those can be any type of story.
Would something like a documentary on what's going on now be something that you would be interested in doing?
Well, the film we shot in Atlanta in November deals with what's going on now. It's called Hands Up. That's the film I was just mentioning. That deals exactly with what's going on now. It's with T. We just happened to shoot it last year. And I'm ready to unleash that. And for that to come out. And so, and that's not when I say it's to a T. What happened this year. We follow the life of a young Black boy from 1855. We start in slavery on a plantation, and we take it all the way up to 2020 right now. And basically we show that there's not much that has changed in this country since the beginning of this country, at least history. And yeah, so to answer your question, yeah, we've already done that, and we're slowly starting to promote that. And it's called Hands Up.
And it speaks
volumes
to... Does
that also touch on the fact that there's supporting in other countries as well? Even back in, as you said, 2019, are you going to touch on the fact that other countries are now speaking up as well against what's going on?
Yeah, well, the film is already shot. Yeah, we already shot the film, so we don't deal with other countries supporting the movement right now. What we deal with in the film is the ancestral history of the systematic racism that's been happening. So our film deals with the root of, it's not dealing with support, it's dealing with the issues. When did they start, and what's the issue? What's the real root of it? So we already shot the film, so we're not doing any new edits. We're not adding anything new, because it's the root. It's like a virus. You know, when you have a cancer, they got to find out where did it start. And that's what our film deals with. And it takes us up to 2020, because we're trying to show in this film that there's nothing that has changed, nothing. And so until people start acknowledging that, until we start talking about reparations, until we start talking about, hey, how can we fix the systematic hundreds of years issue, then the problem is always still going to exist. It's like the virus. The virus is never going to go away without the cure.
Right, and it speaks volumes that you said that this film was initially filmed last year in 2019,
yep.
And it's still 2019, and it's still relevant to what's going on a year later. And it just goes to show you that. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to tell you real quick. We didn't plan for it to come out until November of this year. So the film was done November of last year, not to come out until the election year, right before the election year. So we're just moving it up because it's more timely now than when we thought it would have been more timely.
Right. It's definitely needed right now. And I like the idea and the concept that you're going back, you know, from starting the film in 1855 and just kind of go through the years and show the different, you know, different time frames of how this thing started and how, well, not started, but how it continuously rolls over in generation to generation. And then it comes up to like right now to this day, shows the type of injustices that we face as Black people in this country, that even from 1855 up until now, everything is still across the board the same for most of us, you know, the experiences that we,
that we're dealing with. And the reason why we chose 1855, that was strategic too, because this is very close to the emancipation of the proclamation. So we wanted to make sure there was context in this. And all the actors play different characters. So, for example, we follow a little boy the entire time. And he, when we first are introduced to the little boy, he's a slave. And when we're first introduced to the master of the plantation, he's the master. When we see them in 2020, same actors, he is Tamir Rice in 2020 because he's only 12 years old. And the master of the plantation is the chief of police. And we start with them too, and we end with them too. And so we did that intentionally. So the actors love playing dual roles because we're just showing that the roles have changed, but it's the same. Even the plantation life, we show that now in the park. It's the same thing. You know, the parks have become plantations for people. So, yeah, it's a lot of analogies in the movie, and it's my best piece of work. And the it was a very hard movie to shoot in Georgia. Georgia gave us a lot of problems, which is interesting. Lee Merritt, who you see on TV, he had to end up representing me and getting involved on getting involved with making sure we were able to shoot this film, because they definitely tried to stop us from shooting this film. You know, I was accused of being with Black Lives Matter, which is interesting. And then today we have Black Lives Matter streets going up. So it's very, very ironic, a lot of the stuff we went through in November 2019 to shoot this movie, that now people can see why we need to shoot it. But Georgia gave us a lot of problems, and that's what's interesting. You know, I shoot mostly in Georgia, and everybody thinks of Atlanta as a Black city and very Black. It's not. And the bottom line is it's a Republican state. It's a Confederate flag state. It's a conservative state. And when you go 20 minutes outside of Atlanta, you are in the Dixie South. And I had to get that reality check for somebody who shoot. I shot A Question of Faith there, the last film you asked. I shoot a lot there. And I had to get that reality check of what Georgia was. And we experienced it dead on with numerous plantations that rejected us. The state, we had to get the state involved. The NAACP and Urban League also helped with this project. And it was a battle to shoot this project.
Wow. And that's something that when I was watching the news coverage with Mayor Bottoms down in Atlanta and T.I. And, you know, he got up there and said that Atlanta was the Wakanda. And I'm like, I don't remember. I lived in Atlanta, not Atlanta, but I lived in Brunswick, Georgia, exactly where the situation happened with Aubrey, the murder with Aubrey.
Yeah,
but
that's a small country town.
Yeah, it's small country town. And then, like, when you go into Atlanta, everybody's like, oh, it's Chocolate City. I'm like, not really. It's a lot of Black people live here, but at the same time, you go over just right outside Atlanta to Lawrenceville. Lawrenceville was documented on one of the Oprah shows back in the day as being an all-white town, and they didn't want any Black people there. And then you fast forward a couple years later, all that stuff doesn't go away. You know, it's still there.
No, Oh, we have so many experiences, Mason, that we're going to probably slowly start talking about, the producers and I. Just as you know, if you lived in Georgia, most plantations are going to be closer to Savannah. As you go down that 285 or towards Savannah, for example, once you start getting 45 minutes out, there's not many Black people. It just really isn't. And then these plantations are all owned by Caucasians. Then when we had to shoot cotton scenes, we shot a little bit in Texas as well. When we have to shoot at any cotton mills, they're owned by Caucasians. And when you start going into those real rural areas, it's lily white, lily white.
Yeah.
And we were battling it out with these plantation owners because they wanted to know the script. They wanted to see the content. This is just a shoot there. And normally,
the idea that a person owns a plantation has a problem with the truth being told And I'm like, you're literally on a plantation where slaves were, where people were enslaved.
Exactly.
And you, like, the truth is already there. So what difference does it make?
It's so deep, Mason, yeah. That a couple of plantations are owned by the government. So what happened now, a lot of these are historical places, right? And so, because we looked in Louisiana and Texas to shoot this. And so a lot of the plantations can't be taken down. So then the state gets involved. And it was very interesting that one state agency said to me, well, we don't like the context of your script. Now, normally when you look for a location, you never really give anybody the script. It's none of their business and it's confidential. So there were cases where we had to give up our script, which was very interesting. And then to get the rejection back, well, we have a right for you not to shoot here because of the context of your script, which is interesting. And then when I got on the phone with one of the state agency people, they said to me, well, why can't you show anything good happening at the plantation? Because in our script, nothing good happened. And I was like, because there was nothing good that happened at the plantation. So it's interesting to have this dialogue in November of last year with somebody questioning me, why I'm not showing anything good happening on the plantation.
Yeah, I definitely know exactly what you're talking about. There's these documentaries. Well, I wouldn't call them documentaries. There's these short clips on the life of slaves on the Washington plantation, George Washington's plantation. And they have like these reenactments from actors. And they try to glorify everything and make it look like it was just like, you know, a walk in the park. Everybody was enjoying their life there as a slave. And I'm like, the mentality to think that we, like, you still have an enslaved person. So it doesn't compare to if you give me a good day, I'm still enslaved. So that's still not, and I still have to walk on eggshells to, you know, and not be my true self. I have to pretend to be something I'm not. I have to act a certain way to please you. So I'm not truly free, even if I'm smiling and you know, sucking and jiving. To please you, I'm not really happy, and trying to get that through some people's heads to understand that, it's like, I'm like, there's no good days on a slave plantation. How could you right. How could somebody produce something like this and put it up here for people to have the idea that he treated his slaves very well, and then you learn about the story about Anna Judd, who basically had to escape for her freedom from George Washington. If she was escaping, why would she escape if she was so happy? Because she wasn't free.
For anybody who was stripped from their culture and from who they really are, name changed and everything, just taken, even your mother, you taken from your mother's hands and sold to another property, there's no happiness, there's no bond, there's no togetherness there. Of course there's not any happiness on the plantation. That's even for families of today, you know, it's systematic. They take the children out of the homes because, they're unfit, and then give them to another family of another culture and expect for that child to be, like, totally happy. It's the same thing, in a sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's why it tripped me out when the woman asked me the question, wasn't I showing that in the script? Because I was the director. And I said, because there was nothing good that happened. And she was appalled. So, you know, of course, that plantation didn't let us shoot there. But it's okay. We got it done. We finally found a plantation that allowed us to shoot.
Yeah, I remember being in Brunswick. I was actually, I'm not from Georgia, but I lived in Georgia for a little short time. And I remember working at one of these places that I worked with the youth there. And I remember we were taking a nature trail that they had on the campus, and walking through there, there were sugar plantation mills all around on the campus. Like, there were literally reminders of slavery everywhere in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a constant reminder.
everywhere in Georgia.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
It's the first time I ever encountered something that up close for myself. To see that for myself.
That was mind-blowing to me, too. I agree, because for me to do a tour of so many plantations and to see, like, the whipping post, to see that they still have that.
Mm-hmm.
We have pictures of burial grounds where people as early as 1940 were buried there because they were separated from their family or didn't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
The plantation owner was the family. I got a history lesson, and the producers, they did, too, and it was an amazing experience.
Was it a culture shock being from New Jersey, where I actually live, I currently live
awesome.
Right now in New Jersey? I love it here. Was it a culture shock going down south and being in the Deep South, you know, dealing with the people, production, extras? Was there a different sense of, you know, how everybody kind of went about how they did things, being from, you know, up north and coming down south?
No, because historically my family's from the South. So we're from Greensboro, North Carolina, Greenville. So we always go down to North Carolina to see that family there. So I was a little bit familiar with the South. That's very common with people in the North. You know, they send you to the South for the summer. So I never would have to go for the summer, but we would have to go a lot to see a lot of family members. So I knew a lot about the South from that. And then when I started shooting movies, I used to shoot in Wilmington, North Carolina. I did a film with Isaiah Washington called The Sincere. It's another one about the deep-seated racism in North Carolina. And we were starting to get a real perspective of being a African-American filmmaker shooting in these white towns and how they perceived us. So I was prepared to shoot in Georgia since I already shot a lot in North Carolina, and I've shot in Louisiana. But when for this plantation movie, the reason why there was culture shock for some things for me was because I'm dealing with the ancestors that owned the plantation. So what do I mean by that? I'm dealing with the great-grandsons and the great-cousins and their legacy. So that was really fascinating to talk to people who try to explain to me how the cotton mill business destroyed them, or how slavery really messed their cotton business up. Or to talk to somebody who said, well, my great-grandmother told me these stories of the Civil War, and then to see the history, a lot of them kept it. The culture shock was more on that they still didn't have a perspective of how the damage of slavery. They were more concerned about the economics, and not that this damaged a whole generation of people. You're more concerned about the fact your business fell apart.
Right.
Again, that sounds like what's going on now. They're more concerned about the economic system than what the real matter is.
Yeah, when it comes to the looting and whatnot. I'm not sure if you are you familiar with a documentary called Slavery by Another Name?
No, but I've heard of it though. I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it. I think it's been at the Pan African Film Festival years ago, but I've heard of that.
Yeah, I wish someone would, you know, kind of take this piece and do something with it, because I literally been sharing it with, I've known about it for a couple of years now, but I've been sharing it with, they posted it on YouTube, so I've been sharing it with a lot of my my male friends and my female friends, and, you know, of different races and things like that, to understand that how the systematic racism works and how, you know, when they say, well, you guys were free in 1865, and then I showed them this documentary, like, it wasn't that way, literally wasn't that way for most people in the South, being leased out to corporations and forced into labor. The leasing system they used, the convict leasing system, where they would basically take... young African Americans from the ages of 8 all the way up, and basically sometimes kidnap them into this system or falsify criminal records and things like that, so they can put them in the system. And there was, you know, in the film, it speaks on how some people never saw their family members ever again, or, you know, they just know that people were just started coming up missing in these southern states and things like that. And to find out that a lot of people actually never knew this history actually existed, it's been something of mine that I've been very passionate about, trying to get people to be knowledgeable about this, to just understand how bad our people have been treated in this country. And it's not just they're lazy, they don't want to do anything with themselves. You know, the reason a lot of people are in the ghettos and the poor economic areas, it's because of systematic racism from generations and generations. We didn't get the same opportunities afforded to us that, you know, our white counterparts, their grandparents, you know, were able to buy land, start businesses, and you know, being able to have generational wealth to carry down. You know, we were forcefully put into these situations by our own government to keep us down. And so I try to make sure people are aware of these type of histories that happen to us.
No, that's smart. That's real smart because if you don't know your history, what happens, right? We all three know. We repeat it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So how are you being affected by you know the last couple of weeks with the brutal murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Aubrey and Brunswick? How has this affected you as a whole, as a Black woman? How has this affected you personally?
I think personally, because I've always was aware of so much of the violence that's been going on against us as a people, that part didn't surprise me. I think what has energized me, I have a positive take on it, is to see how now we're calling people out, we're making people accountable. People have to talk about it, whether they like it or not. I love that. I love that we made the country uncomfortable. We made our friends uncomfortable, real talk. We made our coworkers uncomfortable. And I think that's the part that I like to see. I like the fact that everybody now has to talk about it, whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed this. You know, people just don't. We've had other videos of people being killed on tape. This is not the first one. And I think people at this point just have had enough of it. I like the fact that other countries have gotten involved and spoken out against the social injustices here. I like that we're holding people accountable. And it's impacting other areas. So I'm in entertainment. Now in entertainment, people are starting to call out the studios. It's starting to trickle out into other areas, and that's what I love to see, that we need to call out everybody who has been involved in some type of discrimination against people of color. If it's in the workplace, I don't care if you work at the hospital, if you work at the studio, wherever it is, we need to call everybody out. So I have a positive take on it. I love the fact that things are playing out the way they are. Normally, the police would not be charged. Normally, it would just go away, and that would be the end of it, right? I love the fact that we're keeping people uncomfortable. I love that we're keeping our foot on people's necks. I love it because I do think that when it comes to this election in November, which is more my focus and platform that I've been talking about, that we have to make a change, and we make that change with voting. We make that change with putting who we want as the mayor, the city councilman, the senator, the chief of police. You know, all these positions you vote for, and people don't realize that. We make a difference. The fact that a Black mayor today in D.C. can make sure she changed the name of 16th Ave, right before 16th Ave, that street, to Black Lives Matter.
Right in front of the White House.
Mural. Yeah, right in front. It's like that happened because they elected somebody in office that can make that happen. So we have to keep this pressure going until November. We got to keep it going, period. But we definitely keep it going until November because people can't sleep that, hey, this is going to be an easy election. No, this is going to be probably one of the worst elections we're about to encounter.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of fraud, a lot of backstabbing. It's going to be on. I'm telling people 2020 is a year of vision, but it's also a year of purging. It's also a year of uncovering. So I tell people this year is about to be rough. Like, it's already rough.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to get worse. I really do.
Yeah, I think it's the thing that, you know, it's one of the things my grandmother, you know, used to say, you know, after the storm, there comes the sun, shine. And I think that 2020 has been a hell of a storm for everybody, you know, across the nation, across the world. Everybody has been suffering. But I also look at it the same way you look at it positively, like, everything that's going, you know, all the wrong things that happen, even with the person we have in office right now, I feel like it's what's the people view him as a common enemy. And I feel like the support that we're gaining from all these 18 other countries that came out and protested with us about the injustices in America against Black people or people of color. I spoke with my mother this morning. I was telling her, I was like, I don't know if the support is as genuine as I want it to be, because I feel like it's one of those things, because I look at some of those other countries, they have some of the same injustices that happen in their country against people of color.
Right.
But absolutely, I feel like everybody's uniting because everybody has a common enemy, and that's the person that we have in the White House. And we take it as we take whatever support we can get, and because it's making a statement. And I think that it was necessary to have somebody like that to make people open their eyes and realize we do have a problem in this country. Because with his election, he magnified all the issues that were people kind of like, you know, kind of covering up and everything like that. And now it's getting to the point where people are like you said, people are being called out from every type of work environment, be it entertainment, your local restaurants, whatever. Everybody's being called out for having these type of racial issues in their workplace. And I think it's a beautiful thing because now we have more allies being more vocal and more visual, looking at the images of people walking in solidarity with people of different races. It's a statement that we need at this moment. And I think that movie that, to go back to your movie, Hands Up, I think it's so necessary. And I think it's amazing that you guys have something, you already had this in the works, but the perfect timing for everything. And I think just right now, this is definitely, that movie and that film is definitely what we need right now. Just you speaking about the contrast of going back to 1855 mm-hmm. all the way up until now, you know, I'm really excited about watching this film because just the different layers of it just is already has my attention and I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, we're excited about it and we're rushing to finish it, to be honest, because we weren't expecting to have it finished. But time is like that where things happen and now's the time. So we're doing everything we can around the clock to get it done.
That's amazing.
Definitely keep us informed as to when it comes out so we can make sure we post it and get it out there.
Yeah, promote as much as we can.
Thank you so much for that.
And it's just like I said, it's just amazing how things work in this life. Like, you know, you guys made this film last year. We had, like you said, we always had these issues, but you guys made this movie last year and right now it resonates with the people right now. And I think that's just a testament of just like right time and right place for everything. And I'm so excited about this film. I seen some of the clips on your page and it's already moving just to watch, you know, the small pieces that you have posted. So I know when the film is going to be groundbreaking to reach a lot of people.
Yeah, we really hope that at least we can start the conversation. And right now the conversations are happening, which is good. And that's all we want. Everybody's not going to agree with everything. But I do think, too, to start the conversation. We don't all have to agree, but let's just have it. Let's talk about it.
That's great. Is there any other projects that you're working on besides Hands Up that we can look forward to in the near future?
Yeah, I'll let you know. I just had two TV shows come out. So in the month of May, I had two different TV shows come out. One was called Pump, P-U-M-P, stars Ray J, Mike White, Jennifer Freeman. And that's on a new platform called UrbanFlixTV.com that came out May 1st. And it's a comedy, but it has a message. So it's about a bunch of misfits at a gym, but there's a message behind it. And that's called, again, Pump. Then on May 28th, I think it was, that another TV show come out called Laugh Tonight with Damon Williams. That's a pure stand-up show with Chicago comedians. So we flew out all the comedians from Chicago. We shot that this year in January, and that just came out. And you can see that on UrbanFlixTV.com as well. UrbanFlixTV.com just premiered, and it's an online platform geared towards telling stories from multicultural perspectives. And they're a new platform, new network, new production company as well. They also produce content in-house. And so look out for them. You can subscribe for free for 7 days. You can do a 7-day trial. And after that, it's $4.99 a month. So both of those TV shows just came out in May. I was in the middle of shooting a third TV show with the same company, but we got shut down, of course, when the coronavirus happened. And then future projects, we have a romantic comedy, we have another faith-based, and we also have a thriller on deck. So I do a little bit, like I said, of everything, and I'm excited about the future. My school actually produces projects. So my school was one of the producers of Hands Up. We also did a project called Transgress last year, which is a little bit of a sci-fi slash horror about a mysterious woman from biblical times who has snakes in her body. And she targets certain types of people. So not to give it all away, that's called Transgress. So we just premiered that at the film festival in January.
And, well, you said your school. You said your school. Could you speak on that? What do you mean by your school?
Yeah, no problem. Absolutely. Yeah, so I have an online educational platform, which is a school I started 2 years ago called Backstage Pass to the Movie Industry. They can go right to that website if they want, backstagepasstothemovieindustry.com. And at our school, I teach people street smart strategies on how to be successful in show business. And I coach actors, writers, producers, directors. We create content. We travel to film festivals. The last one we attended was Sundance. This year in January, I'm diversifying the industry by first educating people who want to break in. It's online, virtual. We've been on using Zoom for 2 years now. You know, people just found out about Zoom, and we have students from all over the world, not just this country, all over the world. And again, it's called Backstage Pass in the Movie Industry. I started it 2 years ago, May of 2018, just as a way to help prepare the next generation. A lot of people want to be in entertainment, but they have no idea of the business of entertainment. And if you want to be in here just to sing and dance and act, that's fine. That's more of a hobby, and you can do that at home. In your community center. But if you want to really be in this business and make some money, you need to educate yourself or you will be ripped off. There's no doubt about it. And so I started the school because so many people were coming to me for advice. And I said, I wanted something more structured. And I see so many people being ripped off. And they wonder why. They wonder why some of our greats like Red Fox, Sammy Davis Jr. have died really with nothing because they didn't know the show in this. And so that's why the school is there.
How do you do your casting for your projects?
We always have a casting director. So we have a casting director. We put it on Breakdowns, which is Actors Access, which is the traditional way. And we start moving people out from that process. It starts with the casting director, and then it goes to myself and the rest of the team. And we hold auditions. So we do it very traditional.
So for each project, are you looking for, like, more original faces, or do you find yourself wanting to get with people that are more experienced? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, each project is different. There's our big projects. We make offers to exactly who we want. We don't hold auditions for those positions. And then we always have positions that we can have a brand new actor. Out of all the projects I've done in the last 7 months, we've had a mixture of both seasoned actors and then we had unknown actors. So we look for it all for different reasons. But we do, a lot of times, we need a name actor or somebody who can sustain the sale of the film. Again, we do the film so we can make money, and if we don't have a person there that can generate money off the film, the distributor won't buy it. So a lot of times people don't understand the business of it, that we have to create a film, and somebody has to buy it from us. And for them to buy it, a distributor has to be somebody who can generate a sale off of it. So that's how that works. That's why a lot of films have names in it. Now, there's many films with no names that have done very well that were able to generate their own buzz and marketing and be able to build an audience without it. But traditionally, you do have people in there that can command a sale. And that repays the investors who have invested in you, and it repays the studio because they're the where they're investors.
So is it hard getting funding for projects?
Yeah. It's very hard. That's the hardest, one of the hardest things for producers. Yeah, they have to believe. They have to know that money is safe, so that, because there's no guarantees. It's an investment, right? So it's like investing in real estate. You can invest in real estate, and then the house can get burned down. So, and there's no guarantee, like I said, no guarantee. So it's a very risky investment, and a lot of times people have to really believe that this will make a return on their money and that the concept will do well.
Wow. I'm definitely looking to check out your school. I have some friends that are looking to, they started the script writing processes, come up with like a lot of stories, but don't know really how to make it, to move it to the next level, the next phase and after that. And I think I'm going to recommend your school to them so they can check it out and, get some of the knowledge that they need. you know, as far as the business goes.
Because
a lot of people, focus, like you said, a lot of people focus on the entertainment part of it. Oh, I got a great voice, or I can act, or I can dance. But when it comes to the business side of it, you don't want to keep hearing these stories about, you know, our people dying penniless after, you know, a career in entertainment, because they didn't know what to do with the money and have been taken advantage of throughout the process and the career. So
that's what we do. We have guest speakers, and last night we had a guest speaker. We do workshops. There's workbooks. There's so much we do with the students, and a lot of times, the average person I meet that wants to be in the business, they don't have a clue about the business, and they just want to do it, but then they get upset when things don't go their way. And so I'm a tough teacher. Like, if you want to, it's like being a doctor. If you want to be a doctor, you have to go to medical school. You got to go to school. You got to educate yourself.
Yeah. So, well, that's a lot of knowledge. We want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today and drop all these gems on us today. And like I said, like I know, I'm always under your comments calling you a queen, but I really mean that. I really admire
what you've done.
Yeah, I really admire what you've done with your career. You're a true boss, a true queen, beautiful lady, inside and out. And we look forward to the Hands Up. Yeah, definitely. We look forward to the Hands Up movie coming out. Keep us posted. We definitely want to support you. And also, if you could send me some information on your school, I definitely want to get the word out about that as well.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, we will.
Definitely.
Absolutely. I'll do that too. We'll have that done today, because we're definitely, the school's been growing very big in the last 2 months because people are home. And there's some amazing guest speakers we have. And we're also teaching people how to make a revenue stream outside of entertainment business. And the reason why so many of my students didn't have any money coming in when coronavirus hit. So we're also acknowledging that you have to know how to make a revenue regardless. And you cannot wait for an entertainment check, because the entertainment business basically was shut down the first time in history. And so everybody sitting at home waiting for a check, there were no checks. So we also educate people too on financial resources and other ways to make revenue.
It's amazing. Definitely what's needed right now in the entertainment business.
Oh yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, entertainment business is going a little bad right now. So,
yeah.
Yes.
I know it's going to be hard for everybody to go back into everything, because I know everything is going to look totally different once you guys get back into the swing of things. It's going to be different. Just getting adjusted to all this COVID stuff and this racial stuff.
I don't know what we're going to walk into. I'm at the point now where whatever happens this year happens. Who knows? I'll be back on set in 2020. I don't know. I plan to, but I'm going to take it step by step, because I don't want to risk anybody's life. Insurance companies won't insure us right now because of coronavirus. There's a lot of things going on in entertainment. AMC theaters are thinking about closing their theaters. There's just so much going on that it makes our heads spin.
Wow. Well, like I said, we are so ecstatic. We're very honored that you shared your time with us today. And I'm so glad that we got to listen to you and learn so much about who you are. We hope you come back again. We're looking to try to set up a panel, you know, with film producers, directors and stuff like that, to kind of do some Q&A stuff.
Yeah. I would love to. I'd be honored to be a part of anything. I just want to get the word out about how to educate us. You guys are entertainment too. This, what you're doing, you're providing an entertainment platform for others to speak on. And that's huge, and that's important. So I love it. I'm here to support you. I would be honored to come back as a panelist.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we here at Every Artist Podcast, we literally, our mission is basically to bring light of people that make the things work that we normally don't get to see. Like, everybody knows what A Question of Faith is, but a lot of people didn't know the name Angela White. And I think it's very important people, especially young Black girls, get to know that there's these queens and bosses that are making moves and making things happen, that they look just like you, to be inspired to be the next generation to do the same thing, or even take it to the next level. So this is what we try to do here. We try to bring light. Yeah.
What I like is the fact that you are strong on educating them on entering into that area, the assistance that they won't get if they try to go out on their own. That's powerful and speaks for itself.
Yeah, that's really important because when I tell you so many people get ripped off, I've been ripped off at one point. You know, it happens to everybody, right? You get in there and you're just excited. Somebody offers you a deal, and you just sign the paper. You don't read it. And then later on, you have regrets, right? And so it's happened to me. It's happened to so many. And I said, it doesn't mean it's never going to happen. But at least if you have a little knowledge, you're prepared to, you have a little idea of what to look for, right? And you're not as green because people do prey on people in this business. Let me keep it real with you. People are out there looking for people that are green. They just are.
That's true. Well, that's it. That's our today. That's the end of our show. We want to thank our special guest, film producer Angela White, for joining us today. I want to thank my guest, Lisa G, my co-host, Lisa G. We will definitely, you guys, stay informed. We'll keep you posted on the school information, the next projects that Angela has in store, and we'll definitely keep you posted on when Hands Up is released. So keep an eye out for that, and we want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Mason. God bless.
You too,
Angela.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.